And on that note, I want to welcome everyone to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to thank everybody that's been watching in our YouTube chat, but most of all, and as importantly, I want to thank everybody for the great amount of downloads on iTunes and all the places you can stream. We truly are humbled by it. We are humbled by the great reviews. They're always fantastic reviews, I got to say. It's a lot of fun. I like when people write at the end, and it's also funny. And it's a nice review. And I want to remind everybody you could find Ben at our email, benstein.substack.com. But we are joined tonight, regularly now, from 93.1 WIBC, the present of conservative talk radio, Rob Kendall. Welcome, Rob.
Boy, you were right. Nate does have a hell of a mustache. That's great.
Incredibly neat.
He's got an incredible mustache. He's also got to he's got to put on his audio whenever he gets a chance. But we're also joined tonight by Nate Hockman from Young Voices of America. Welcome, Nate. You look a little perplexed. We'll get to you in a second. But of course, this show would not be complete without writer, saint, sinner, provocateur, husband, father, grandfather, lawyer, economist, but of course, Dr. Benjamin Jeremy Stein. We salute you, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. You have an appointment.
I haven't made a doctor's appointment just yet.
Nate? Well, I don't know if I can see you. The only part of my staff that I have available are the ones who do the high colonics. Are you here for high colonics?
It's funny. I want to start singing, doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. And Nate, your audio, you got to turn off the mute button, Nate. I don't know how you do that. Oh, there you are.
It took me a sec, but I'm here.
Welcome, Nate Hockman from Young Voices of America. You look great as always.
Thank you.
So I just want to, we have a small, but we have a growing and building platform of people that listen to us. And I feel like it's very important that we share things that come from our heart sometimes, that we share things that are bothering us. And I want to tell a quick story, if you'll give me a moment. When I was in second grade, my mother will dispute this story.
Your mother is surely not watching this now.
My mother always watches.
You're lucky, Drew, that you have a living mother.
I am blessed with an amazing mother. And when I was in second grade, my mother pulled me out of this school that I was in that taught Yiddish. And for those that aren't familiar with Yiddish, it's a German dialect mixed with Hebrew. It was mostly, and a few other languages. It was mostly used in Eastern Europe. And when asked why, she pulled me out because my mother put me in a different school that taught Hebrew. And the reason why she did was because she said, if we have to run anywhere, we're not running back to Germany, we're running to Israel. And I hate to say this to my Jewish brethren, we are getting to that point. To my tribesmen who voted for the Democratic Party that has been infested by people who might not be putting us in the ovens, but have definitely turned it on at this point. You are collaborators, my family included. We don't want pleasantries. We don't want months on Amazon or Netflix. We just want to be left alone. And never before, as an American proud Jew, have I been so ashamed to live in this country that I love so dearly. And there you have it, Ben Stein. That's how I'm feeling right now.
Well, I still love America with every cell in my fat old body. I think it's the best place there ever was on this planet. There's no place else I want to go to. There's no place else I want to run to. I just am incredibly happy being an American. Yes, we have some very nutty people in this country who are saying terrible anti-Israel and some terrible anti-Semitic things. Unfortunately, some of the worst of them are in the Congress of the United States. One of the very, very worst of them is a senator who is Jewish, and that's really awful. But America overall is the best place there's ever been on this planet.
And again, Ben, it has been the best. But we are losing its exceptionalism, and it's more than just Jews are being attacked on the streets.
Well, with all due respect, as that we have our friend Nate, who is a master of data. How many Jews are being attacked on the street? This is a country of 340 million. How many Jews are being attacked on the street? I know the number has gone way up. I'm very well aware it's gone way up.
I don't think we really know yet exactly precisely how many are going up because it's such a recent occurrence. It's clearly going up. I don't want to minimize what's happening. I mean, it's going up, and it's going up in mostly in blue areas on college campuses in major cities, because this is a left-wing kind of anti-Semitism.
Wait, stop here for a second. This really horrifies me more than anything I've heard so far. It's going up on college campuses?
Of course it is.
The Princeton professor, actually, to his credit, just released a statement condemning the uptick in anti-Semitic incidents at Princeton. But before we get into that really briefly...
Can you tell me what that incident was? Because I do not know about it.
Well, there were a series of incidents with Arab kids mostly going after visibly Jewish students and, you know, saying that they hated Palestine and, you know, they were Zionist racists and all of the sort of normal anti-Israel attacks that are really scapegoating Jews for perceived sins of Israel. But I just briefly before we move on to that point, I wouldn't go as far as Judah to say that I'm ashamed to live in America, because I wholeheartedly agree with Ben. This is the greatest country in the history of the human race. And I love it with every fiber of my being. And every day I wake up, I'm grateful to be here and live in America, despite the very profound problems that we increasingly have. I delineate between America, which is America in its totality. It's our history. It's the American people. It's our culture, it's our traditions, it's our food, et cetera. And the American regime, which is completely controlled by the left now. And it's just worth pointing out. It's worth pointing out that all of the problems that Judah rightly points to and says that it makes him ashamed to be an American are the left's doing. So it is, and the left is constitutionally anti-American. I'm tired of pretending they're not. I'm tired of pretending that they just disagree about policy. The left hates America. They are fundamentally, their entire political program is opposed to America. Joe Biden and Barack Obama both said their politics were organized around wanting to fundamentally transform America because they don't like America as it stands. So all that is to say, America is a lovely, beautiful country filled with fundamentally decent and good, hardworking people. The American regime is corrupt and oligarchic and opposed to everything that America traditionally has been and is controlled entirely by the progressive left and should be the object of our hate, not the American nation itself.
Now, may I respect? Sorry.
Listen, Nate, the hate I have, you're correct. It's not the majority.
All right. What is your definition of regime, Nate? Because I would have thought by regime is usually meant the government, but I think
it's the ruling class, which is an entrenched bureaucracy in DC paired with big business, the major corporate leaders, big tech, the cultural industry, the media, the sort of professional managerial class, the people that James Burnham described as the managerial elite, who move between the private and the public sector, but are the people who run our country. And are both the sort of entrenched bureaucracy in DC and private sector workers in the media, Hollywood, the academy, the universities, big business increasingly, are all cut from the same cloth. They're the same people. They have the same elite worldview, and they're destroying America, and they're actively working together to do it. And they are, I think it is useful for conservatives to think about this in an almost Marxist way, frankly, as a class struggle between the regime, the ruling class, and ordinary working Americans, because that really is the dynamic in America today.
Well, sir, with the greatest possible respect, I think you're very largely right, but there are certainly plenty of extremely important people who don't hate America, who love America, who are very devoted to America. I give you, for example, my dear friend, Warren Buffett, who is I think as much a part of the regime as you would define it as any person on the planet.
Yes, but here's the thing. But when you vote with that block, Ben, when you vote with that block, and you become part of that block. You become a collaborator. So I'm sick of people saying, well, it's my friend that did it. It's them. It's that senator. It's that. No, you are part of a party that has allowed the infestation of anti-Semitism, of real racism, and socialism to invade our country. So I'm so sick and tired of this thing. Well, it's they're part of the good guys. And Rob, I'm sorry that you've been we've kept you silent this long, but
go for it now, my dear friend.
No, I love that Nate still has the bed on the floor. It brings back many fond memories. I love that.
This is my new apartment in California.
That's phenomenal. So. I love it so much. No, it's really interesting because, like, I think a bigger one problem we're not talking about here is people are now afraid to be bold. And we saw this today with John Cena, the professional wrestler, now a movie star, when he comes out and calls Taiwan a country, which it is. Everyone knows Taiwan's a country. Yet because they want to sell this new Fast and the Furious movie that he's in China, he comes out almost immediately and is apologizing for calling Taiwan a country. Even Wikipedia, which is about as far left as you can get, lists Taiwan as a country. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. But if I may say so, as long as we're talking about the establishment, who would be more of a part of a leader of the establishment than Warren Buffett? And yet I have had the great privilege and pleasure of having dinner with him many times, having one-on-one, actually one-on-two, because my wife's usually there too, conversations with him. He's an incredibly important person. So is his junior partner, Charlie Munger. They're both wildly patriotic, love everything about America, have no hesitation in saying it. What are they doing?
What are they actually doing for America?
What are they doing? They're helping people.
They seem perfectly happy to have sold out working class jobs to China for the last couple of decades. Sir,
with all due respect, Nate, good try there, my friend. But actually, he has been a huge investor in Israel. Huge investor in Israel.
Well, Israel is great, but I'm talking about America.
He has a tremendous number of employees in the United States of America. And is, I think, as private employers go, is as big a private employer as there is, except for Amazon. So with all due respect, my young friend, I think you got the wrong cowboy there with Mr. Buffett. If you
brought him up.
Studios, if you name the heads of the movie studios, yes, they do tend to be quite left-wing. But a movie studio is a small business compared to the really big businesses in America. And they've been sort of out of step with America for a long, long time. Let's not forget, but Mr. Trump got 75 million votes, more or less, last time. We're hardly out in the wilderness. We have still a great number of people in the House of Representatives, a great number of people in the Senate, a great number of people on the courts of America. We're hardly.
But it doesn't matter. America's falling apart. These people aren't doing anything. This is the point. We can have the government, and it actually doesn't even mean anything anymore.
They are destroying
America before our eyes.
We
can have the White House. Trump couldn't even really.
How is America falling apart?
Our cities are on fire. We're teaching our children to hate the country they're going to inherit.
Sir, with greatest respect, I don't know where you've moved to in California. I hope it's Los Angeles. I'd love to be friends with you. But I drive to Los Angeles many times each month. It's not on fire. It's not burning down.
This doesn't mean that the country isn't falling apart. America is in decline. We are in decline. We have opened our borders to an important share our values and vote for the wrong party.
How do you know?
Well, because they vote 7 out of 10 for Democrats in half a decade.
They're illegal aliens. They can't vote. They're mostly.
Well, they're illegal until both parties vote on bipartisan amnesty bills.
Sure, and then, with all due respect.
And then give them citizenship to, you know, because the Koch brothers want it. We are importing an entire class of people.
And you won't let me talk. You guys have a good time. It's my show, and Nate won't let me talk. Ben, can you please come back?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you.
Ben, he wasn't talking over you. We were having a hard time with your audio. Can you please come back? Ben, I'm begging you to please come back.
Ben, I'm sorry, I genuinely didn't. I thought we were having a spirited debate. I didn't mean for you to take offense.
Sure, Nate. I don't know where, what fucking planet you come from, but interrupting the person who's talking and not letting him talk is not a serious debate. It's jeering, catcalling rudeness.
Ben, I don't think he saw you talking. I'm being serious when I say that. There
are people all around me here. They saw me talking.
The problem sometimes, Ben, can I explain something? The problem sometimes is with this technology is when two people are speaking at the same time, and I'm not defending anybody, is that it blocks out somebody else's sound.
He can see my voice moving, sir.
Okay, so if we could start this again, I don't think that Nate meant to do any harm to you, Ben. He apologized.
Okay, God bless you for apologizing. Sir, I'm also in Washington, D.C. quite often. It's not burning down. It's a great, great city. It's a gorgeous, glorious, wonderful city. I have not been to New York in a while, so I don't know. My sister lives there. She lives in a very, very nice part of New York. She certainly gives no reports of anything burning down.
Ben, I think what he's referring to, if you don't mind me jumping in, is Portland, the homeless crisis we have in California.
That doesn't mean the city's burning down.
I know, but Ben, Chicago isn't actually right now a beacon. The state of Illinois right now, Ben, with what we've discussed on this program.
We don't doubt that there are problems. There are very serious problems. That's a far cry from the city burning down. Well, I wish you could see the life day by day that this old man gets to live.
But that's you. That's you. You know, when I got out of my apartment building today, I'm not joking. There's a homeless encampment, Ben, where people have couches set up. It looks like a patio set up outside my apartment complex of where people are living at night. And
very unfortunate, that is not the same as a city burning down.
All of our major cities this summer were on fire, and billions, if not trillions, of dollars of property damage were caused because most of them did burn.
Name
a major city that wasn't on fire this summer.
Sir, you are a statistician. You really think there were trillions of dollars of damage done?
Well, I know that's the New York Times, and they're certainly not a paper that's invested in portraying the damage as overzealous.
Do you think there were trillions of damage done from the riots in a number of American cities?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you what, we'll go to a quick break. Nate, Google quickly. It's not this past summer. It was the summer before. The past year, how much damages were cost?
Look up the past 100 years. I mean, look, we know daily life in America is great. There's no doubt about that. I'm sorry you have homeless people living across from you, Judah. On the other hand, you're often over at Alex is my wife. Alex is in my house in Beverly Hills. There's certainly not homeless people across from us. It's a very nice place. I've often invited you to stay there. It's a perfectly nice place. There's a lot of room there.
But Ben, we're not talking about the neighborhoods you live in. We're talking about the neighborhoods most Americans are living in.
Crime is at a 3-decade high in all of our major cities.
I don't doubt that. That's a lot different. I don't doubt that. But that's not the same as the city's burning down. I don't doubt there's a lot of crime. I've been the first to comment on this show. But let's bear in mind, 30 years ago, it was worse. So it's gotten better.
On that note, Rob, any thoughts before we segue?
No, I just think there's a total lack of leadership in this country. And I'm not just talking about from the politicians. We were talking about this today, and I hate to come back to it, but I think it's a great example because we see this time and again with this John Cena thing. Because look, Israel, China, not the same thing, but what's going on here, I think is pretty similar, in which people are so petrified now to stand up for what's right, to say what's clearly fact, and yet corporate dollars, money, fame, acceptance, whatever you want to call it, has crippled our society into taking words and descriptions out of the vernacular.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. 100% agree. I think we're living in a world of 1984 Orwellian newspeak. I think we're living in a world that George Orwell would not have even believed possible, because he was transposing 1948 laborite Britain to 1984. He couldn't even imagine a place where you couldn't say the N-word if you're white, and you can say the N-word all day and all night if you are an N. So he couldn't have even imagined that. But that's what we have today. But again, that's a far cry from the cities burning down.
Okay, Ben, sometimes literally and sometimes figuratively, if you live in those areas, it could feel like it's burning down. Your biggest fear, I know this, is the train going through Beverly Hills, right? Because...
Oh, sir, that is a fear.
No, but I'm saying one of your fears is the trains going through Beverly Hills. Because
I wasn't originally interested in like fixating on the semantics over whether or not the cities were burning down or not. I think that all of them being on fire is, you know, calling that burning down is fair, but I'm happy to see the point that that's like not technically burning down. The original claim, Ben, that you disagreed with was that America is in decline and we have a ruling class that is destroying our country. And you took issue with that, but I'm confused how you could say that the very true thing that we are living in a sort of increasingly Orwellian society and not agree with the contention that America is in decline and is increasingly in a very bad way right now.
I think politically, culturally, for sure, the culture has just collapsed. I mean, the culture is garbage. Politically, jurisprudentially, has collapsed, just totally collapsed.
Yeah.
But in terms of day-by-day life, it's great. It's incredibly great. It's unbelievably great. It's my mind.
Ben, for you. You know,
I go to the grocery store and I see people buying groceries there.
You do.
Sir, do you think that most Americans are not undernourished?
Increasingly, yes. Yeah, we have an entire quadrant of the country that is addicted to opioids. We have a crisis of suicide. We have life expectancy rates going down for white men for the first time in American history. Sure. We have the cratering certainly of our political culture, but life is getting worse for most Americans.
Okay,
life is getting much better for wealthy, privileged Americans, but for the bottom two-thirds of the society, it's getting worse.
I think what's usually expressed as a health crisis in terms of nourishment is Americans eating too much, not too little.
Yeah, the nourishment thing I'm less attached to. The overall point that life is getting worse for Americans is the main
thing. Let me ask you a question, sir. Life is getting worse for some Americans. Do you think that for the ordinary, do you think that for the middle class, college educated American, man or woman, life is getting worse?
Yes. Yeah, the middle class is completely cratered in the last two decades. It's disappeared. We live increasingly in a low trust, high low society where there's no great American middle anymore. It's disappearing. That's precisely why we got Trump, because he was appealing to nostalgia for an America that was majority middle class. It doesn't exist anymore.
I don't know. I wonder.
A college degree doesn't mean what it used to anymore.
I wonder who all those people are at the grocery store or at what's the name of that store we sometimes go to? It's a discount store that I never go to, but a friend of mine goes to. What's it called? I don't know. Anyway, who are all those people at those stores? Who are all those people at the Walmart? Look, I live part of the year in Sandpoint, Idaho. The major store there is a Walmart. It's jammed all the time.
That's not really like an argument. I mean, respectfully, Ben, those, you know, people like you and I who are from...
Okay, guys.
Give me data.
I'm trying to. Opioid addiction, deaths of despair, suicides, declining wages for men, life expectancy going down, decline in religiosity, decline in civil society, higher rates of anxiety and depression than have ever been experienced on record in American society. I mean, I can give you list after list after list.
Okay, Nate.
Once anecdotal experience at the grocery store doesn't really counterpoint.
Nate, let Ben speak.
Yeah, you guys have a great time. Goodbye.
Now, Ben, why are you leaving?
I didn't interrupt you. You asked me a question and I answered it.
Okay, Ben, I'm asking you, could we change the topic, Ben? Can you please come back? I don't understand what's going on here.
I don't either. I didn't interrupt
Ben,
you.
Nate, you're a very, very young man. You do not know what real suffering is. In the Great Depression, people are really suffering. People really, really suffer.
I agree with that.
My parents suffered. Their parents suffered. Their parents suffered. My wife's parents suffered. My wife's grandparents suffered. People really suffered. 30 years ago in New York City, there was really scary, violent crime. It was scary even to get on the subway. Very scary even to walk down the street in a nice neighborhood. In Washington, D.C., where I have property. It was very scary, even to walk down the streets of a very nice neighborhood. That's not true anymore. As to the rates of suicide and depression, if you've got them, I'd like to see them. I'd very much like to see them.
I'm happy to send them to you.
Addiction, I think, is a fraud. I think what's really happening with opioid addiction is that people are seriously ill and need opioids in order to alleviate the pain are not getting them. And that, I think, is the real crisis, is a lack of feeling for people who are seriously ill. But if you're quoting a great deal of data, and you have a and you apparently are very good at collecting data, I'd love to see the data.
Okay, on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. Nate, at any point in the show, you could bring up data that you have. I want to thank everybody that's in the chat. Yes, we are having a lively discussion tonight. Not trying to hurt anybody's personal feelings at all. People see this world differently, but that's what separates us from liberals. We're allowed to see this world, and we're allowed to see America differently. We're allowed to argue about the shape and state of America and not cancel ourselves or cancel each other.
Hey, where are you going to be living in LA?
I'm living in Claremont right now. I'm working at the Claremont Institute, which is a conservative think tank.
You guys, sure. Do you think that is burning down? I just go by.
This is not this fixation on what burning down means, or like what cities burning down is, like, okay, really,
let's
not
just,
actually,
guys, let's just change the
point
the topic
that I was making at all.
Guys, let's just change the topic. We're gonna agree to agree and disagree to agree and disagree.
The point
to
is that America's in decline. That's my fundamental contention.
With all due respect, I don't think it is in decline.
Okay, guys, enough. Enough, everybody, enough on this topic, please.
Didn't have before, for example, everybody's car is air conditioned. That may seem like nothing to you, Nate, and nothing to you, Bob, and nothing to you, Judith. It means a hell of a lot to those of us who grew up in an era where the cars weren't air conditioned, and it was very uncomfortable being in a car.
And a record number of young men are blowing their brains out. So, like, you know, well, air conditioning.
Okay, enough, guys, if you just, guys, Ben, I'm asking you, Nate, I'm asking you, we're going to switch topics. This is very lively. Whoever has facts, bring up the facts. No anecdotal data on this show allowed. Just like Bill O'Reilly had the no spin zone, we don't allow anecdotal data, a word I learned from Ben Stein.
It's not really data.
Hey, Judah, can I offer to find some middle ground here?
Yes, sir.
What I often do with my listeners in my day job, try to find areas of agreement, because I think we agree on most things. So my grandfather, it would have been his 99th birthday, May the 12th. And he made it to his 90s. He didn't make it to his 99th birthday.
Oh my God, he's a day older than me.
That's right. Well, a day and a couple of years. But I was thinking, you know, he grew up in the Great Depression. He and my grandmother were the same age. They grew up in the Great Depression. And my dad and I have had this conversation. I know Ben and I have talked about this before on the show about some of the worst moments, the worst times in American history, the Civil War. One of the great things about America, though, and you think about those people from the greatest generation, as Ben was alluding to, they grew up in the Great Depression. And they went and fought in the Second World War like my grandfather did. The women went to work to run the country. And many, many people came out of that who were born into abject poverty like my grandparents and passed away, not super wealthy people, but certainly in a rising middle class. And I think that's some of the concern now, is that we're diluting the ability of people to rise up into that middle class, which is a part of American greatness, is the ability to rise up from poor to middle class, from middle class to wealthy. And I think maybe that's, I'm trying to bring this all together here, that there is some concern that, yes, while things abjectly may be better, there's a concern about people not being able to rise up. And that's part of American greatness.
Okay, I got to say something before.
Education, I mean, the people who are not rising up are the people who do not get an education. If people get a college education, they can rise up, and they do rise up.
I just got to say one thing before I just plug this show. I find it really funny, as I said in the beginning, that we don't want any Netflix platitudes or Amazon platitudes as Jews. I can't even get a platitude for 2 minutes here. So let's lighten up. Ben, everybody's right. America's the greatest place in the world still. It is. Is it in Nate's defense? Is it by the government we have now and metrics we can see with our own eyes? Is it declining? 100% when you allow people with ideologies into the House of Representatives, Ben, like we have now. You would have said it in the 50s with who do you always bring up, Alger Hiss?
He was in the 40s, but there was a communist named Mark Antonio in the House of Representatives in the late 40s and early 50s.
And so let's just all agree. But if you just tuned in, thank you. Stay with us. Don't forget to download our podcast like you have been. Don't forget to subscribe to Ben's email, benstein.substack.com. We're all a little thrown off by the love that's going on tonight. And I could feel that love tonight. And there really is love. Ben is the most forgiving person in the world to everybody out there. I could say that to you from many times of screwing up. Ben is all about love and forgiveness. And that is his tagline and through line through life. Sorry, Ben?
I got it too.
I didn't hear you.
That I like data too.
You like, and Ben likes data too.
I can give data. Okay. If you guys would like. I don't know if you guys like to talk about it.
The next time you're on, Nate, I promise you, data galore. But bring the data, and I, because we know you have it. That's why we have you. You're a datatician. But welcome back to the world according to Ben Stein. I want to switch topics a little bit to some very frightening news. About this Maggie Haberman yesterday, and we all know that the media collective all walks with the same talking points, and it was only eventual that, and we brought it up on the show, Ben Stein, that they would be blaming Trump for somehow with the Wuhan lab, when Trump all along was the one saying it came from China. And we have Maggie Haberman yesterday who said, well, we didn't want to go, you know, Trump was making it political. And I'm thinking to myself, you're an investigative journalist. It shouldn't have mattered what President Trump was saying at that time, even though it turned out to be true. Why were you not investigating what he was saying?
Well, it's a sad thing. And as a person who was a columnist for the New York Times for a number of years, they are the least interested in truth of any newspaper I've ever dealt with. I mean, I've written columns for the Washington Post, for the Wall Street Journal, a wonderful small afternoon newspaper in LA called the Herald Examiner, which is probably the best newspaper I ever worked for, and also for the New York Times. The New York Times had the least scruples about simply making things up of any newspaper I've ever seen. I mean, they just would routinely make up things. And that's a very sad situation because they are considered the newspaper of record, and a lot of people believe them.
No, but I also, but getting back to it, I find it fascinating. How can you, this is like, we've seen it all, right? With Hunter Biden, right? He was innocent without investigation. That's the left's media motto, right? When it comes to Dems, innocent without investigation, Ben. And it's sort of frightening, this collective cabal that is literally, I mean, I don't want to use terms like destroying our country because I don't have full data on it. And I'm very scared now to use certain words that will upset people. Nate, I mean, Rob, what are your thoughts on this thing?
So we talked about this today, and I think this is interesting. By the way, our audience loved having Ben Stein on the Mock and Rob show last week. And we got so many compliments. It was so great. The story about Elvis, people loved it. They thought it was great.
God bless you.
So Trump has been right about so many things. And I said this today, look, there may be guys who technically were higher IQs or whatever, but Trump may be the most brilliant person to ever hold the office of the presidency. And think about how many things he's been accused of being crazy of that turned out to be completely right. Like, probably Obama was tapping my wires, and people were like, oh, Obama wasn't spying on you. Well, he wasn't technically tapping the wires, but he was spying, and Trump was right. He just didn't use the right phrase. Trump has been right about so many things, and he was totally right on this one as well.
Sorry, Ben. And yes, Richard Nixon, too.
Richard Nixon, smarter than Abraham Lincoln, smarter than George Washington.
Ben, there's only been one guy to be a billionaire and president in the history of this country, and that's Donald Trump. I'll put that. That's pretty good resume builder.
I don't think he really is a billionaire. I think that's a fake.
And I your turn. It's your turn now, Rob.
No, I just look. I mean, again, there. I'm not going to say that was he a greater leader than George Washington? No,
I love him.
I just think Trump did so many tremendous things for the country, and there's no doubt. And Ben, you're the economist, so you can speak to this. That we were experiencing arguably the greatest economy, not just in the history of the country, but in the history of the world before COVID. And that was because he was a different president. He was putting people in power, but in a different way. He was banking on the American exceptionalism to come through, and it did. And I just think the guy was phenomenal and right about so many things, and this is just another
example. Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I love him a lot. I started out, as Judah well knows, supporting several other Republican candidates. But once Trump became president, I was very impressed and got more impressed every day. And I alone, I think of anybody I know of in the media, read his entire speech he gave on January 6th. The idea of saying that was an incitement to violence was just absolute disgustingly dishonest nonsense.
And I think, by the way, what Rob was saying was Trump's pulse on things he said being true, on his pulse on many of the American people was as good as any president before him.
He was great.
I think that's what Rob was saying. Was he the smartest person ever? No. But when it came to foreign policy, when it came to the economy, I mean, right. He was, you know, if he was a baseball player, Ben, you'd call him a five-tool player. And
I love him.
Last five-tool guy we had was Nixon. What are your thoughts on that? Let's go to Nate on the New York Times thing and journalists blaming Trump for their reasons for not investigating.
Well, that's, you know, par for the course these days. And anyone who takes the New York Times seriously at all is a fool at this point. But I mean, the point about Trump, I agree, particularly with your last point, Judah. The man was really nothing short of a genius when it comes to his connection with the electorate and his understanding of, A, what the American people are interested in, and B, his ability to sort of bypass the traditional institutional ways to like get your message out and just talk straight to the American people and not have to deal with giving press conferences to the New York Times and doing press releases to the Washington Post. And so the man was in many ways amazing. He was also unfocused often and emotionally immature and self-sabotaging, particularly in the second half of his term. But that kind of comes with the whole package. I like Trump the political phenomenon more than I like Trump the man. Trump the political phenomenon was, you know, really a great man in the sort of historical sense. He was a figure of historical importance. He exposed the ruling class for what it is, this sort of oligarchic left wing that controls all of our major institutions. He radicalized a lot of people, including me, to understand really what's going on in America. And he was the first Republican in generations to actually listen to what the base of the Republican Party had been begging their leaders to do for decades. In governing, he was often much more distractible and impulsive and made a lot of mistakes and staffed his administration with a lot of swamp creatures who ended up sabotaging.
Until his last 2 years, and we've discussed that on the show.
Yeah.
But Ben, I want to get back to a point you said about...
I'd like to make another point.
Yeah, please do.
Compared with the president administration especially, or the Obama administration, he loved the Constitution of the United States, the fundamental underlying doctrine of the United States of America. He respected it and stood by it, whereas the people who are the Democrats, I think, fundamentally want to tear it down and discard it and have a government which is closer to some kind of African tribal way of governing a society. And it's heart, as my wonderful goddess wife would say, it's heart-rendering that we do not have a president who reveres the Constitution at this point.
And Ben, I just want to bring up a point because New York City is about to bring down grand jury and they're going to go for indictments. It was pretty much being announced today. They're heading, you know, for Trump's whole family.
Wait a minute. Now, Judas, you always seem to be about two or three hours ahead of me. Tell me, let's talk about this a little bit.
The New York Cyrus Vance and that woman are alerted them that this is no longer a civil matter. It's a criminal matter.
Second, Cyrus Vance and I'm sorry, what woman?
From the New York Southern State. I can't remember her name right now. If somebody could look up her name, that would be great. And they are going after pretty much the whole family, the Trump Organization. Sorry? Because you see, I want you to explain to people this because you understand this better than anybody. You're right. We don't know Trump, how rich he is, because when you own real estate, nobody ever knows how rich you are because the value, especially in New York.
Cyrus Vance.
I said Cyrus Vance. But there's a woman.
Someone else working with is Cyrus Vance.
Yeah. And the New York State prosecutor, I can't remember her name. She's an African-American lady. But Ben, as you know, accusing him of taking out loans on the valuations and of
Letitia James
and of fraud. And they're accusing him of all those things. So, it's quite, as you know, this is, you know, it's cancel, kill. And
I'm very, 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 very sad that I didn't see this story. This just came across the wires this afternoon.
It's pretty much been being reported, and this is what's coming down the pike. It's going to be about 6 months of a grand, 3 to 6 months of a grand jury, and it's 2 years of an investigation. And Trump's never been investigated for 2 years before, but the difference is this time is it's scary. That this man gave up for what he gave up for the country to now be threatened with jail time, Ben, is a frightening thing.
I will say that I wouldn't be surprised if Cyrus Vance would. There's nothing he would do to surprise me. I mean, the man brought very, very serious criminal charges against Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the head of the World Bank.
You're the only one defended him.
Ostrous, on its face, insane allegation of rape. Just screamed fraud. And after it was discovered that it was fraud, and after it was discovered that it was a political setup by Strauss-Kahn's enemies in France, he did nothing about those people. He knew who they were. They were in New York. He did nothing about them at all, period. He has been a disgrace. He was preceded by Robert Morgenthau, a truly great district attorney for the borough of Manhattan. And to think that a genius and a great patriot like Morgenthau has been supplanted by this fool is very scary. But what we see is that what we learned in law school is a prosecutor can indict anyone. They can find something.
It's very easy.
Lives of any of us on the show, maybe not Nate because he's so young, but certainly anyone on the show can find something to indict us for. And it's terrifying. Prosecutorial discretion in this country is terrifying. It has now jumped over into the political sphere in a big, giant way, and it's absolutely breathtakingly terrible.
And it doesn't matter, Nate, or the people that are in the YouTube chat, how clean you are. If they want you,
it doesn't matter how clean you are. The prosecutors can get you for something.
If they want you, they will get you. And Trump and his children and his family and everybody that's ever associated with him, Rob Kendall, are number one on that hit list.
Yeah, the old saying, and I know this because my dad was a federal law enforcement officer. You can indict a ham sandwich. That's the old saying. And look, they've made it very clear, and they're sending a message. It's not just about Trump, it's about sending a message to the people who share the Trump ideology, people like Ron DeSantis, et cetera, who are looking to maybe take that torch and run with it, which is we will come for you. We will take you out. You won't just be silenced on social media. We will destroy your existence and we will put you on trial. And there's a huge swath of the Republican Party, not the majority, but there's certainly a big group that are just fine to see Trump go down because they hate the dude because he took power away from them.
But also, if I may say this, what we're seeing is that the prosecutors, the Democrat prosecutors all over the country, can now start doing this to just about anyone. I mean, it's just amazing. One of the things that we learn in law school is we study about criminal law. talk about the prosecutors can do this, they can do that. And I remember very well asking my criminal law teacher, okay, so then what's the countervailing force that stops them? And he said, there is none.
No, it's absolutely fascinating. And we're living in frightening times. I don't want to say the worst times. We're living in scary times. Don't have any data to prove anything. But what perception-wise, Ben, it's very scary out there.
I said, and politically and jurisprudentially, it's very, very bad. Day by day, great.
Because after cancel comes kill. And I'm not trying to say that for the effect. That's really because canceling is killing. But right now
that's not even hypothetical anymore. I mean, if you look at what's happened to the January 6th protesters, right? Like a very, very small minority of those people were legitimately.
I'm sorry, the what protesters?
The January 6th.
January 6th rioters. A very, very small amount.
That thing was a fraud. Nothing bad happened.
Yeah, regardless, I agree with the broad sentiment, which is that there was a very small cohort of people in that crowd who were legitimately bad actors who showed up wanting to do violence and hurt people. The vast majority of them were basically just confused boomers who wandered into the Capitol because that's where people were going. And they have now been treated to a shock and awe prosecutorial campaign where a bunch of 65, 70, 75-year-old men, totally harmless, have had the book thrown at them. And one of them just got, this is not something that most people have heard about because it's not obviously not something the media is going to report on, just got beaten half to death in a prison. He got beaten blind. He went blind because the two prison guards kicked his head in repeatedly and called him a bunch of racial slurs because they were black and he was white. And it became like a race war thing. This 67-year-old guy, who just wandered into the Capitol, got locked up as if he was a rapist or a murderer or something, and got beaten by prison guards who, were calling him white, anti-white racial slurs. Well, sure. So it's
Ben,
not
Nate, hypothetical. Let Ben go.
I think here now we've reached my old friend Jesse Jackson used to say, let us go from battleground to common ground to higher ground. And I think we've now reached a stage of higher ground because I think there are barely more than a few out of the thousands of people who went into the Capitol who were there to do anything but sightsee. And the incidents of violence against property were almost nil. The instance of violence against persons was very, very close to nil. And yet it's being treated as if it were mass murder. I mean, it's astonishing.
And what's funny is, Ben, I thank you because I was actually going to jump in and say that. I was going to say what violence and I didn't see any violence. And the only the person that died, which it took 4 months for them to report, the cop, horrifically that he died of a stroke, right? He died of a heart attack. He didn't die because of the riots, and it took them 4 months to report that. And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. We're all a bunch of lovers here, and I want to thank everybody in the chat that's been chatting along. It's greatly appreciated. The downloads on YouTube are greatly appreciated. The signups at benstein.substack.com are greatly appreciated. Rob, your interview with Ben is greatly appreciated. And Nate, you're greatly appreciated. I love your fervor and your zest. And, I just want to get back. Ben, he meant no ill will towards Warren Buffett. He didn't. There was no ill will or animus meant during this show at all. But finally, I want to get to, we're allowed to say certain things and we disagree, but he didn't bring up I'm not going to defend Nate, but he didn't bring up Warren Buffett. He was simply talking about corporate America, which, as we know, Ben, in many instances now I'm not referring to Warren, don't have America's best interests involved. Yes, Rob.
I was just acknowledging, the conversation earlier about this January 6th thing. And I think it's important to point out that 25 Republicans voted for this January 6th.
35.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Liz Cheney, Kensinger. And you know what? One of our guys here in Indiana, Trey Hollingsworth, voted for it too. And his excuse on that was so weak on saying, well, if we don't vote for it, then the Democrats get unfettered investigative powers and we won't have any Republicans on there. And it said, you guys did nothing. These Republicans did and said nothing while in many large cities, police officers were killed all across the country last year. What about David Dorn in St. Louis? Nobody cared then.
It's all like the Committee of Public Safety in the French Revolution, which was a committee, a commission, one might say. It basically had unlimited power to prosecute and execute anyone who they deemed to be enemies of the new state. And that, I'm afraid, is going to be what this commission is. And it's extremely frightening. It's really terribly frightening.
Okay, the last thing I want to get to quickly, guys, and gals, well, they're not gals, but guys, is...
Wait, are there no gals in our audience?
No, there are. There are the gals in our audience, but the last thing I want to get to, guys on the panel and guys and gals in the YouTube chat, is this is amazing. And you can't make this up. It's L. Ron Hubbard-like, because the way I look at, you know, Scientology was started as a joke and it became a religion. Mm-hmm. And
But L. Ron is dead.
Yeah, but let me finish up my there's the second part to that statement, which Black Lives Matters is now being allowed to fly at U.S. embassies. They are yes, Ben. It was announced.
No, that cannot be. That's too horrible.
Ben, I am not joking. They announced that.
The Biden administration is flying the pride flag in the Afghanistan embassy, the gay pride flag in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia.
I mean, but getting back to it, Ben, it's Black Lives Matter was started on a lie. It's founded and it's steeped in socialism, anti-Semitism, any ism. It's founded on
big lie.
One big lie, just like Scientology. Yet they're allowing the flags to fly. This is like, I mean, I don't even know. I know this story, Ben, is incredibly hard to believe.
Unbelievable. Horrifying. Just beyond words.
Yeah, horrifying.
I'm at our house down in the desert. It's in a gated community. And I don't think I'm going to leave. And I'm just going to stay here.
I wouldn't blame you. But Rob, it's sort of frightening that Black Lives Matter was started on a lie that we know.
We've seen people like Patrice Cullors, who is, you know, one of the higher ups there, one of the people who helped grow that organization, who's an admitted Marxist, you know, has what, three homes? Now she's going for a fourth home, or it's a fourth home, going for a fifth home. Well, that's some interesting Marxism. Someone should explain Marxism to her and capitalism, because I don't think she quite understands it. Look, I mean, it's really scary what's going on about out there. And Ben, I don't mean to be the bringer of bad news, but you ask somebody like the McCloskeys in Missouri, who also lived in a gated community, they just got that thing torn down, and didn't they get indicted for defending their home on their lawn? I mean, I'm not sure anywhere's safe anymore.
Wait a minute. They were in a gated community?
Yes, Ben, they were in a gated community.
How did the demonstrators get in?
They broke the gates down, Ben. And because everybody is scared to defend themselves, this goes to what I was saying to you on the last show, when I was talking to my family members, Nate, because I was saying how I was suggesting pepper spray, and I bought that online for Ben. Then I was suggesting a stun gun, which I suggested, and then I bought that for Ben. And then I kept on looking on Amazon, and I saw you could buy a taser gun, which Ben bought for himself, but I sent to his house. And I said to my family and people, why don't you get this? And people are like, well, what if I use it? I'll be in trouble. And I was like, it's better to be alive and maybe trouble than dead. And well, you're in trouble. And this has been people's. Sorry?
You know about that. Maybe good things happen to you after you die.
I didn't hear you.
I said, maybe good things happen to you after you die.
That's very true. But since we don't know, but then you know what I'm saying. This is people's biggest fear, is standing their ground, Nate.
It's very scary. Very scary.
Yeah, things are getting really bad.
But day by day, life is great.
Yes.
There are problems, I agree. There's no doubt about it. The stories that Judah just brought up are absolutely blood-curdling. But day by day, life is getting great. I'm going to leave my gated community in a few minutes, drive home with my incredibly wonderful driver, and I'm going to stop and get an ice cream sandwich, and it will be great. And I will sleep in the car, and I'll get home, and I will make a steak for my wife and her nurse, and it'll be great.
But Ben, you brought up the other day how you were attacked while you were driving. You filed a police report. You've brought up how you're scared that you're going to be pulled over by the police for the thoughts you have and the things you say.
I wasn't attacked. I was sort of approached in a
gun. Okay, but you said attacked at the point. But you bring up all these things that you're scared of that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you never in your wildest dreams would have thought you'd be scared of. So in 5 years, Ben, we've had a
politically, culturally, jurisprudentially, it's down the toilet. On the other hand, we have everybody in the world has air conditioning. Everybody in the world has a microwave. Everybody in the world has access to really, really good quality salmon. Not bad.
Yes, that's not bad. But again, Ben, come on. You know, I know you're half being serious. You're half joking around. You're terrified. When people send you,
I'm not terrified at all. I'm terrified of many things. I'm not terrified of that. I'm terrified of losing people close to me that I love. That's what I'm terrified of.
Right. But you're also, I know you've called me in the morning scared about what's going on in Israel. I know you've called me in the morning terrified about the squad.
I have not called you about the squad. The squad is just, as far as I'm concerned, they're just a bunch of homeless people who happen to have found a home in Congress. They're a bunch of homeless people.
Rob, final thoughts.
I just think it's a fascinating time in American history. And again, I guess I take hope in the fact that this country has always been so resilient. We have always had the leaders that we've needed throughout American history, from George Washington to Lincoln to Roosevelt to Reagan. We've always had the people that we've needed in times of great trouble. And I hope that the people are willing to stand up again and believe in American greatness. I don't know if they are, because they are distorted so badly by the media and the guilt they're putting on people for this country. But I hope that American history proves true again and America comes out of this greater than ever. But I'm not optimistic about it.
That's the better question, Ben. Are you optimistic about us coming out of it?
I'm optimistic about my wife and I coming out of it, but I'm not optimistic about my granddaughter. And that's really sad.
And that's very scary. Nate, final thoughts.
Yeah, I more or less agree with what Rob said. And I just think it is imperative right now that people who love this country and care about passing down America to future generations figure out what time it is and understand that the challenges that we're facing in American society today are in many ways unique in the course of American history. We're facing monumental challenges. And if something doesn't change pretty radically pretty soon, we might not have an America to pass on to our children.
Hey, what should we do?
It's a great conversation. I have a lot of prescriptions that we can talk about. I don't know if we have time right now.
No, we don't. But that is an important question of what can we do. And you know, there's a guy that's running in Florida. He announced it today. A former vet. You could look up his name on Breitbart. And as the midterm, sorry, Ben.
Vet includes the word former.
He's a vet, sorry. And boy, you're really.
That's Santini. It's not Santini. It's
but whatever it is.
Sabatini. Anthony Sabatini.
Look him up. Donate to him. And that's how we try to take it back. The midterms are coming up. Is
very good point.
Getting our candidates in, and it's primarying the ones that are part of the 35 that are in safe Republican districts. Don't primary people that aren't in safe Republican districts. Otherwise, we're really screwed. But on that note, I want to thank everybody that's been in the YouTube chat. It's definitely been one of the livelier discussions we have had, and livelier disagreements we have had. And we thank you greatly for putting up with us. You could find, of course, Rob Kendall every day from 9 to noon, 93.1. Bam, the president of Conservative Talk Radio. And of course, you can find Nate. Where can they find your stuff?
At NJ Hawkman at Twitter.
Yes. Oh, God, you had to bring up Twitter, Nate. How can you be there? You're part of the problem.
Don't have a parlor
Nate.
Yet. I know.
You're part of the problem, not the solution. That's Judah Friedman telling you that. You're part of the problem, man. But of course, thank you, everybody, for downloading the podcast. Don't forget to give them 5-star reviews, even this one. Please, 5-star reviews, and you can find Ben Stein at benstein.substack.com. Of course, you can find Ben on Parler at Ben Stein. We will be posting there when more people show up, but we will be posting there. And of course, Rumble, you can find us there, all the shows, and we have exclusive videos on Rumble. We are humbled by you joining us tonight and you following us and you sticking with us. It's truly humbling. It's truly great.
The American
and of course, spectator.org. But Ben Stein, if you have the strength to sing us out, please go for it.
You've got to win a little, lose a little, and always have the blues a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. God bless. We will see you Thursday night.
God bless you.
Thanks, guys. Night.
Good night.